Are you ready?
Yeah.
Are you with it?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go. You know what to do. The whole world's watching and counting on you. And all you people listening out there, everybody, everywhere.
Hang on, hang on, hang on!
Welcome to Checkered Past, a loving postmodern examination of the Go-Go Check branded comic magazines published by DC Comics between February 1966 and August 1967. I'm Dr. Bob, and each week I'll be your guide on this trippy tour through 535 mid-century masterpieces of graphic noveldom.
This week, Captain Storm number 18, cover date March 1967, cover price 12 cents, cover artist Irv Novik, edited by Robert Kaniger, featuring Save My Island, written by Robert Kaniger, art by Irv Novik, and Sugar and Spike number 69, cover date March 1967, cover price 12 cents. Cover artist Sheldon Mayer, edited by Murray Boltonoff, featuring Sugar and Spike Become a Superhero, written and drawn by Sheldon Mayer. Are you ready? Are you with it? Then away we go, go!
Fluffy clouds move by us.
See how the clouds move by.
See how the morning mist can hide us away.
Hide us away. And now is so much fun. What?
PT Boat 47 is damaged after an encounter with the enemy. When the crew spots an enemy destroyer, they take refuge on a small island. While the crew makes repairs, Captain Storm meets the natives. Their legends speak of a man with a wooden leg who will save them. Then, Sugar and Spike become a superhero. What? That's not possible. Superheroes fly over buildings and fight with outlaws. Sugar and Spike are two little babies who can't even talk yet. Confused? Don't worry. I'll be right back with Dr. Husband to explain everything.
You're cool, Kalinda Didian. Stuff, that's what you mean to me. It doesn't make sense to anyone but me. Cause I'm that way about you. You're handsome, such a knockout. And girls rave about you night and day. There is no other.
Well, don't you look relaxed?
I'm very relaxed.
What's happened?
Well, I just came from a deep tissue massage focusing on my neck, shoulders, arms, and back. And I feel fantastic.
Well, your voice is an octave lower.
Is it?
I can say that.
Yeah, yeah. I can tell it's pretty deep. I'm really relaxed. Feels incredible. My neck feels great. Everything feels great. I can move my shoulders now. It's nice. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right.
Oh, listeners can't see how handsome you look with your new haircut.
Well, I can't help that.
Yeah?
That's just how I got out of bed this morning.
You're just all right?
Yeah, you know. Just, you know, normal work a day.
Yeah.
Have to record this podcast in the middle of the night to avoid lawnmowers and whatnot.
Well, yes, there is that. Of course, when am I going to get the lawn cut? I don't know that I will before we leave.
Well, how would you? You're going to be gone all day tomorrow, and then we're leaving town.
Oh, I know, right?
It's fine.
It's fine. I'll do it when I get back.
Sure. Yeah. Maybe we could hire a boy to do it.
Cut an acre of grass?
Sure.
Yeah, okay.
I'm sure it'll cost a pretty penny, but it's worth it.
Yeah, I'd rather do it myself and save the money. Spend it on things like massage.
Maybe. Now, hear me out.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. We could hire two babies to stack up in a trench coat.
Yes.
And then they could work the mower.
Yes.
Together in tandem. And they don't charge much.
Well, yes.
Baby, throw them a piece of candy and a shiny quarter, like Hazel Devitt used to give me when I mowed her grass. If she saw me doing it, I'd get a quarter. She didn't see me or pretended not to see me, then there's no dice.
Well, you think the grass just cut itself?
Well, when her husband, even before her husband died, he had an artificial leg, just like Captain Storm.
Uh-huh.
And my father made some arrangement with her that he was always going to mow her grass. And then, of course, when I was allowed to mow the grass, I wasn't allowed to do it till I was 13 years old because my father had seen a child get their toe cut off with a lawnmower.
Oh.
Then when I was allowed to do it, I was forced to take on the duty of Hazel Devitt's grass.
You know, I used to cut a woman's grass right down the street from us when I was like 9 or 10 years old. I did it for years. I cut her grass for years.
Now, my grandmother,
yes,
she'd pay me $20. And when I was a shiftless teen,
yeah,
and her eyesight was failing, sometimes I'd go over and tell her her grass needed cut.
You're terrible.
I know, but she had it. She, when she passed away,
she was,
or when
rich,
she moved,
yes,
someone went through the clothes in her closet and found just wads of money stuck in the pockets all over the place.
Yeah, what happened? The money thing didn't get passed down to you.
No, it didn't. It had to be spent on home health care and whatnot.
Yes, of course. Yes. My goodness. Well, it's so good to see you this evening.
Well, I've been here all day.
Well, yes, but I've been in and out all day, haven't I?
You sure have.
Had to get new tires for the car.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Goodbye money.
Well, I know, but thank God we have it, you know. But the car's, I think the car's 3 years old. And it needed new tires. It was time for new tires, and we needed to get them before we took a trip.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, back to the babies stacked up in a trench coat.
Oh, well, I don't want to hire them to do the lawn.
Why not? They've
they'd definitely end up underneath the mower.
No, they've got a rotor right on their head. They could just
see.
Stand on their heads and do it.
Yeah.
Fly around the yard. Sugar and Spike, number 69, by Sheldon Mayer. Now, we give a lot of guff to Sheldon Mayer because these stories aren't necessarily our groove.
Yes.
But he's very widely respected amongst the comics community.
And as stories go, this one is...
This one wasn't bad.
Yeah. I did send you a text that said, if there's two words that absolutely make me shudder when I see them on the cover page... of Sugar and Spike, it's the words novel and length. Novel length adventure.
But remember, at the time these were being published, and you know, Dennis the Menace was hot, hot, hot. He had his own TV show.
Sure,
sure. So little brats were very popular.
Lil, with a L-I apostrophe L, Lil Brats.
And
or was it L apostrophe I-L?
L
apostrophe I-L?
L-I apostrophe L.
Okay.
To pique your interest, mm-hmm, of course, Sheldon Mayer was the editor instrumental in creating the Green Lantern.
Oh.
The original Green Lantern, Alan Scott, as well as the editor responsible for creating the Justice Society of America, from which we got the Justice League and, you know,
comic book
ergo
royalty,
the recent cinematic triumph of the Justice Gang.
Yeah.
So, put that in your pipe and smoke it.
Yeah.
Sugar and Spike, of course, had 98 issues of their own magazine, and it was canceled not because of sales, but because of Sheldon Mayer's eyesight was failing.
Oh.
So, they were going to make an animated series, but he forbade it because he didn't want anyone else working on the characters.
Oh, okay.
So, it ended with... issue 98, but then a few years later he got surgery and he was able to go back to drawing, so he started making new Sugar and Spike stories until his death in 1992.
My goodness.
But the U.S. comic market had shifted and DC no longer felt able to sell the series in the United States, so those new stories were published only overseas.
Who would want to read them overseas?
The Europeans are crazy about Disney comics and all the
funny
animal comics, everything.
Yes.
A few of those stories saw print in digest form during the 1980s, but to this day, many of those Sugar and Spike episodes of later years have not been published in America.
Oh my goodness.
Except in 1992, World Color Press, where DC Comics had been printed for decades, shut down its Sparta, Illinois plant, and the last set of DC Comics printed there made up a retrospective of the plant's past work. Most of them were reprints, but the Sugar and Spike issue printed a couple of those unseen stories and was designated as Sugar and Spike number 99.
I see.
So there's a market.
There is.
Publishers, you could collect all those European stories and make it Sugar and Spike number 100.
Mm.
Make it happen.
All right, let's
go. We can crowdsource it. So Sugar and Spike are about to become a superhero. just like in the comic magazines. Spike is in his home playing with, I don't know, the pressure cooker or something.
Diaper pan. I have no idea what that is, a diaper bucket?
And Sugar climbs in the window to alert Spike that guess who's coming to visit?
What is his name?
Little Arthur.
Little Arthur.
He's the worst.
Yes.
Apparently he's a recurring character. I don't believe we've seen him
yet. I don't recall seeing him before.
But seems Little Arthur always causes trouble, but because Sugar and Spike are babies, they always get blamed.
Yes. I thought this was so funny what they did.
They pre-sit in the corner.
Because they figure, well, we're Little Arthur causes problems.
Yes.
And we get in trouble, and we get blamed. He hurts us. He picks on it, pulls our ponytail, and picks on the other one. So why don't we just save ourselves some trouble and pre-sit ourselves in the corner so he won't bother us? Very clever.
Now, you can tell that he's trouble because he's wearing the colors of the Confederate States of America. He's got a little Johnny Reb uniform on.
I thought that was a... Yeah, it is a Reb. Yeah, it is a Johnny Reb uniform. Yeah, okay.
So, Arthur is urged to show Spike's mother his new invention, which is a crime-fighting device. He's got a pair of long johns,
uh-huh.
A cape, a full face mask with a helicopter top on it.
He took it off of a latex doll, and it takes on the expression of the wearer. That's bizarre.
I wish I had one of those.
I'm glad you don't.
Not a latex doll, just the mask.
Okay.
Of course, Sugar and Spike don't know what's going on because they don't understand adult language. They only understand their own baby talk and vice versa. And the problem is that Arthur can't make the helicopter rotate because it's out of battery power or something. He hasn't figured it out yet.
He can't figure out where the wires go.
He also has this kind of little triple slingshot crossbow of some kind.
Yeah.
So Arthur gets to work figuring out how to uncross these wires while their mothers have coffee in the kitchen.
Leaving the two tots sitting in the corner and Arthur up to trouble with his...
Yes.
Yes. So, meanwhile, not far away...
Two crooks are patrolling the town. They are working for Master Crime Operative The Lion.
The Lion, yes.
And he has ordered them to patrol the town to make sure that Superman and Batman aren't around. Now, this
Sorry,
is
who?
Superman and Batman.
Oh, okay, thank you.
Now, this is very interesting because the other crook says, I thought superheroes were only in comic books and on television, which means that Sugar and Spike do not live on Earth 1, nor do they live on Earth... I forget the designation for where Bob Hope and Jerry Lewis live, because they do live in a world with Superman and Batman. So this is some heretofore unseen Earth, I would imagine.
A different Earth.
A different Earth.
My God.
I know. You love alternate Earths and multiverses and things.
I have become accepting of certain practices, like the fact that Flash can spin his arms. In lightning speed without his arms coming undone.
Yes.
And I have come to accept that indeed in the comics world that I read, I have to just understand that there are alternate versions of Earth.
I'm very proud of you.
Yes.
So
it's only taken me how many years? 10 years?
10 years.
How many long we've been doing this?
Now, one of these crooks, incidentally, collects pine cones, so they have to stop the car so he can... And his collection.
Can you think of a more boring activity than collecting pine cones?
Give me a minute. You know, Aunt Clara on Bewitched, she collected doorknobs.
That's right. Now, I think that's interesting.
Because the actress in real life did collect doorknobs.
Did she really?
Worked it into her character, yes. And I would collect doorknobs if all the doorknobs looked like the doorknobs in my house growing up. Because we had those beautiful old glass doorknobs,
yes.
Crystalline.
Yes, queen.
Oh, they were lovely.
Yeah.
So, meanwhile, back at the house, Lil Arnold has... Arnold? Is that his name?
No.
Arthur.
That's it.
Lil Arthur has got this helicopter contraption working, and off he flies onto the ceiling. Crashes into the... Well, no, first he sees the crooks. Because right. they've stopped outside the house because there's an oak tree and you can get pine cones.
And the giant dollar decides that he wants to climb over the fence and collect acorns. The dollar crook. Because not only does he collect pine cones, but he also collects acorns.
Arthur realizes this is a crook and he sets off to capture him. But then he gets scared. So he flies back up to the ceiling, crashes into the chandelier, damaging it.
Yes.
And then crashes unconscious to the ground.
Yeah, this is a child who's been flying around a room.
Yep.
Crashes into a ceiling chandelier, falls down.
Yep.
Let's say at least 8 feet.
Uh-huh.
Or to the floor.
Yep.
And is rendered unconscious.
Unconscious while the hapless mothers are sipping coffee and gossiping.
In the next room.
And I bet they're putting something in their coffee, too.
With kids like these, you know they are.
Sugar and Spike immediately understand that they are going to be blamed for the broken chandelier.
Right.
And so they decide to take Lil Arthur's superhero costume, stack themselves up like midgets in a trench coat, and fly around the room.
There's logic in that.
Yeah. They are going to go for the open window. Because they, you know, want to exercise a little bit of freedom while they have the chance.
Right. They happen, and just at this time, the big dullard,
yes,
crook is climbing over the fence with his cap full of acorns that he's collected.
Yes.
Collected.
In a panic, he throws the acorns at the sugar spike combination. The acorns get tangled up in the rotor of the helicopter, and they fall to the ground.
Into the arms of the... Crooks. The crook.
They are shoved into the trunk, and off the crooks go.
Yeah. Oh wait. The skinny crook's name is Blinker.
Yes.
Okay.
And
I don't know the name.
I don't know the other one. Yeah. It will come to it.
Yeah.
So Sugar and Spike are in the trunk. Just then, Sugar's mother comes to the door of the Wilson home to look for Sugar. Mrs. Wilson says they're in the living room, but in the living room, what do they find? Unconscious Lil Arthur.
An unconscious child.
A ruined chandelier and missing toddlers.
Yes.
Arthur is awakened to explain what's happened, and he comes to and explains that the children must have been kidnapped by the crooks. And then he concocts this whole fantasy about how he captured the crook, drug him inside, and then a whole gang of crooks came into the house,
right,
and kidnapped the babies. The police are summoned, and Arthur is left to explain to the policeman, but too late. He has a realization that if he tells the truth about him being the tornado tot, it's going to reveal his secret identity. And that's something that superheroes cannot do. He also explains to his mother the reason behind his fabrication. And she covers for him.
Which is bizarre.
Which is also bad.
Let's not forget the two children are missing.
Two infants, mm-hmm. toddlers, who can't understand adult language.
She says, my little Arthur says he won't talk. He won't talk. Sorry. Imagine your mother doing that. She would never do that. Your mother would never do that. She dragged you into...
My mother drugged me to the grocery store by my ear I shoplifted a little pack of Viewmaster slides. I didn't own a Viewmaster,
right,
but they were land of the lost Viewmaster slides. I had to have them.
She sent you inside by yourself.
Sent me inside by myself to speak to the manager and said, if they take you to jail, there's nothing I can do. I've probably told that story before.
I love that
story. But it scared me straight, didn't it?
Yeah, well, yeah, of course.
Except for bilking my grandmother out of $20 bills.
You did the work, though. You didn't just, like, you didn't...
I did the work, but it didn't need done.
Like, yeah, but you didn't, like, just walk up to her and say, your grass needs to be cut, and then stand outside the door and go,
bye.
While she said it and watching her stories.
That's true.
Yeah.
I did have to do the work, and yes. It was hot work, you know.
Yes, of
course. And it was the 80s, so I wore a headband
to
sop up the sweat.
Oh, God.
And my grandmother lived right across the street from Stacy Furr, who was a very popular girl in school.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that she was looking at me. Going to go to school and tell how ridiculous I looked in my short shorts and headband like Olivia Newton-John. She's a very good friend.
Did you wear a tank top?
Oh, heavens no.
Oh, no. So just like
just t-shirt. But, you know, then the 80s, those short gym shorts.
Yes.
Headband.
God, I could just see your miserable teenage self cutting your grandmother's grass for $20.
I don't want to malign Stacy Furr. She's a good friend of mine. Now. Yes. She's very wonderful.
But how we think of things as teenagers is quite different.
Oh, yes.
How we think of things as adults.
So the crooks, meanwhile, have the babies in the trunk.
In the trunk of their car.
They can hear them talking baby talk.
Uh-huh.
So they think they're foreigners. So they think that the babies are trying to make them stop the car and open the trunk so they can attack them. Well, mm-hmm. They're not falling for that. So Sugar and Spike assume that the crooks think that they are still Little Arthur.
Yes. I see you're scanning through this text to try to figure out how to tell this story very quickly.
Yes.
Yes.
Luckily, they also have the little slingshot crossbow thingy.
Which they plan to give them as a gift. Give the crooks as a gift or something.
Yes.
Yes.
Meanwhile,
at the lion's den,
the lion, we should mention, looks just like famed painter Bob Ross.
Yes.
May he rest in peace.
Yes.
They have concocted a scheme. There's two other crooks with the lion. They've created a machine,
counterfeit
credit card machine. Thousands of fake credit cards, all ours. And all of them are perfect because the lion photographed them with a tiny X-ray camera while they were still in the owner's pocket.
So what they plan to do is to buy millions of dollars worth of stuff with these counterfeit cards and sell it before anybody realizes who's responsible for it.
Now, that's not a bad scheme.
Well, this is before eBay and everything else, so they'd have to buy it at full price and probably sell it in a black market or in pawn shops. So they wouldn't be gaining the full amount of, you know, money right. that they spent, but it isn't their money anyway. So.
Sure. Also, this is before points. Because you and I have an acquaintance who has about 85,000 credit cards, which she uses for business purposes.
Yes.
And I don't think you can do this anymore, but she used to buy silver dollars with a credit card to get the points and then walk right down to the bank and pay the bill off with silver dollars. Brilliant.
Yeah.
I think they caught on. You can't do that anymore.
No.
All right. So.
Bulgy and Blinker. Those are the names of the guys who are driving the kids in their car. Well, who have the kids in the trunk of their car.
The lion had intentionally sent them off on this assignment because they're his wife's relatives.
I love that they're his wife's relatives, and that's why he decided to do that. It's like, well, I can't fire them. I can't get rid of them, so I'll send them off on a fool's errand.
And here, another confirmation that we're on an alternate Earth. He sent them looking for something that doesn't exist. Superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
And that will keep them out of our hair while we finish this job and make a fortune.
Right.
Are you sure, Mr. Lion? Are you sure there's no such thing as superheroes? This is,
of course I'm sure. They don't call me the King of the Beasts for nothing. But then the alarms go off in the hideout. Well, the mountain hideout, I guess.
Yes, we should mention that the hideout apparently is a replica of the Matterhorn ride in Disneyland.
Well done.
It's Blinker and Bulgy returning to the hideout so soon, but that's impossible. But they're there because they found a superhero.
They come crashing through the gate.
Yes.
Not in joy, in absolute joy, because they've captured a superhero.
Sugar and Spike are released from the trunk.
Oh, here you go. You are not wasting any
time. Well, we don't need to linger on these pages of how to make your own Valentine's card or the paper doll pages.
No.
Although I would like to cut those out sometime. Did you ever have paper dolls as a child?
I'm sure I did, yeah. The concept is not lost on me.
Good.
What I didn't like was that they had these little tabs that you wrapped around the...
Those little paper
tabs, you know, and those paper tabs would break off. Or yes. They were good for, like, one time use play.
I remember fondly I had a Walton's paper doll.
Oh my God. What? Are you kidding?
No.
A Walton's paper doll.
The Walton's, yes.
Did it just have big words? Boredom. On the package? Boredom. Spend hours of time playing with your Depression era family paper dolls. Well, there's Mary Sue and
Sue Ellen,
whatever.
John Boy, Ben.
Watch John Boy
Jim
write
Bob,
in his journal.
Elizabeth.
Watch Sue Ellen walk around and pout and become
Aaron,
a nurse.
I'm naming all the Waltons children.
I know.
The Waltons did wear clothes, which is the central concept of paper dolls.
Yeah, then playing. What do you do? Walk around and say, hey, well, let's go sit down at the table and listen to Grandpa talk.
No, you don't. You just dress
them. Let's go outside and chop wood.
You don't play with paper dolls. You just dress them and undress them and put them in different outfits.
Why don't we sit here on the front porch and talk about how much money we don't have? Sounds like hours of entertainment.
You be quiet.
Waltons.
Look, they've pulled the babies out of the trunk in their superhero uniform, and it's a real-life superhero.
Yes.
Who proceeds to fly around the room.
Where's my cat? My cat's around my feet here. Go ahead.
I bought me a cat. My cat needs me.
My cat says, fiddle-i-fee, is what the cat says in the song.
In the song.
Yeah.
I've never heard my cat go fiddle-i-fee, but that's another story.
He's a sweetheart. I love this cat.
All right. Sugar and Spike are preparing now to give their present to the crooks. The crossbow thingy.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Which the crooks now assume that they're about to be...
Shot at. Yeah.
The baby still flies around the room. And they accidentally cause a crook. Well, not yet. The one crook is going for a trapdoor contraption, which is a lever on the wall.
To capture them. Mm-hmm.
But Spike has accidentally shot this crossbow and knocked the crook's hand away from the lever.
Accomplishing what the crooks were trying to do in the first place, which was for the cage to drop out of the ceiling and to capture the children.
Right.
Capture the superhero. Sorry.
The superhero.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, back at the Wilson home... Arthur is salty that he did not have a chance to be a superhero. Luckily, he has a duplicate outfit in his rucksack,
mm-hmm.
and he knows how to fix the helicopter, and so off he goes after the departing police, grabs onto the back of the police car so that he doesn't have to fly.
Amazing. The police are going along with a child holding onto the back of this car.
I'm assuming they don't know.
They don't know, of course.
The police have somehow tracked Bulgy and Blinkers to the hideout.
Mm-hmm.
The lion and his men are alerted to their presence, and there is a giant magnet that shoots out of the mountain
mm-hmm.
to snatch up the police car.
It's like an electromagnet.
Arthur, again, chickens out and flies away.
Mm-hmm.
The police are captured.
Yeah, Arthur does leave.
Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot that. He leaves.
Now, Sugar and Spike have been...
Inside the costume and therefore a large sort of ish
right.
thing. But now they get out of the costume and they can climb right through the bars.
Right through the bars of the cage. But then they spot the police
right.
in a cage.
Right, and they think, oh my gosh, those grown-ups are in a playpen together, but they're... They're too big to walk through the bars. We know just how they feel. Let's get them out.
So they get back in the superhero costume. They go find the lever on the wall, release the policeman. Then Sugar Spike sees another lever, and they understand, even though they're just simple babies, that when they pull a lever, things happen.
So they pull the lever and all of the credit cards come swooshing out of the machine. And
like the climax of the Trouble with the Tribbles episode.
Yes.
Of Star Trek.
Yes. And thank God they did this because the machine gun wielding crooks are then completely buried in credit cards.
Yes.
And the police grab their guns and...
Bless you.
Thank you.
You know, massages release all kinds of toxins. Well, that's probably be sneezing all
why
night.
My voice was so low, because, you know, all that stuff goes in your throat. You know what I mean?
Sure.
No, I couldn't breathe for a while. Okay, so through my nose. So they capture the crooks, right?
They capture the crooks.
There's a flying guy. He pushed the switch. We did it. The kid Tornado Tot's there.
But then Sugar and Spike panic because they know. Well, they think. I think this is an unrealistic fear, but they think when the police realize that they don't understand grown-up talk, nor do they speak grown-up talk, that they'll get in trouble.
Yes.
For some reason.
Well, they probably get in trouble a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, when you think about all the things that they've just done.
Well, they get in trouble for things they didn't do.
Of course.
It's this asshole Lil Arthur.
Lil Arthur.
So they duck behind the corner, get out of the superhero costume. The police find these two babies and realize it's the two missing babies from the Wilson
home.
That were kidnapped. So back at Spike's house, Arthur has arrived and is telling his mother how the police car was pulled up by a giant magnet.
She accuses him of making up stories.
Accuses him of lying. Remember in Superman, the movie, 1978, not 2025?
when Lois Lane is on the train and she tells her mother, look at the man running.
Yes.
Yeah,
and her mother smacks her. Of course, that mother was Noelle Neal.
Oh.
The Lois Lane from the Superman TV show. What have I told you about lying? Smack. All right, the police arrive there with Sugar and Spike. They see Arthur in the Tornado Tot uniform and realize that must be the one who rescued them and the babies and captured the lion.
Yeah.
And Arthur is hailed as a hero. But just then the police hear Sugar and Spike talking in baby language.
Right. Which is the giveaway.
The giveaway that those are the Tornado Tot that rescued them.
And then the phone rings for the officers. It's a call at the house for the officers. And one of the officers says, it's the chief. He says they found another Tornado Tot costume at the Lion's Den. It's full of tiny baby-sized fingerprints.
So you can dust fabric for prints? In the 60s, I guess? That's great news.
Yeah.
So now Sugar and Spike are confusedly hailed.
Do babies have fingerprints?
I would assume so, yes, because they do your little footprint and your handprint when you're born on your birth certificate, don't they?
Yeah, but do they really? Like, do babies, is there
they
skin?
They have to. They're wrinkly all over. They have all the whole body prints. Did you know? We could probably launch into a life of crime right now because when I recently had to be fingerprinted for my job, and they do it all, you know, electronically now, they were having trouble picking up my print.
As you get older,
the young man helpfully pointed out, well, as you age, your fingerprints disappear, old man.
Do you know what fingerprints are for, the function?
Climb walls like Spider-Man?
Pretty close. You're on the right track.
Okay.
They provide traction.
Yes.
They provide the texture of the skin that allows you to grab things.
Turn pages. Things
so,
like that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like, yeah.
Well, I must
say. As you get older, it gets harder to turn pages, to grab
things. It's been hard for me to turn pages my whole life. I've always licked my finger. And I continued to lick my finger to turn pages of my iPad to this very day. Which reminds me.
Yes.
When I was teaching a class and writing on a whiteboard. And of course, I'm of an age where you would lick your pencil before writing or your pen or something to moisten the ink.
Yes.
And so I absentmindedly licked
the whiteboard marker.
And then at the end of the semester, when the student evaluations came in, a student wrote, Dr. Bob eats markers.
I thought I said eats marks.
Eats marks, but marks, I knew what yes. they meant. I'm sure the dean appreciated that. All right. The adults in the room and the policeman are flummoxed, and that's the end of the story.
Yeah.
The story was for Ruth Crane, age 11, of Woodstock, New York, Eddie Berggren, age 14, of Denver, Colorado, and Penny White, age 9, Kingsport, Tennessee. I had an aunt that lived in Kingsport, Aunt Ruth.
Did you?
She owned Dalmatians.
Oh.
Which, in case you didn't know, are the stupidest dogs that have ever lived on the earth.
They also have a genetic problem. They go deaf
yes.
early in
Dalmatians
life.
Dalmatians and yes. white cats.
Really?
I know that because we had a white cat, Snowball,
uh-huh. yeah.
who was deaf.
Yeah.
And one day he got up on top of the stove and peed into the burner,
oh,
unbeknownst
no.
anyway. Well, and when someone turned the burner on the next morning.
Oh, my God.
You can imagine.
The smell.
Mm-hmm. Oof. It's terrible.
Yes. I bet that cat went right to the pound.
Actually, he did, yes. Because the vet said, now this was an old-timey vet, Virgil McKee,
yeah.
who still used like the foot pump saw to do neutering and things. I think he's still in practice. And he said, well, that cat will never stop peeing on things. Just put him down.
Just put him down.
Of course, I would have. If it were up to me, I wouldn't have. But Mother Robinson.
Oh, yeah, your mother would kill
no
an animal.
She had no patience for peeing animals.
She had no patience for anything. A cat, dogs didn't dare sneeze in the presence of your mother.
No.
Oh, that sneeze. Gotta go. Gotta go. Say goodbye to the dog. Say goodbye to Rags.
Well, she never wanted a cat, but one of the siblings brought a cat home one day, and she said it has to stay the night, but it has to go in the morning. Well, of course, it never went.
Yeah.
And then we had a whole series of cats,
ugh.
Including poor old Snowball.
What's next?
What's next? I'm going to tell you. Captain Storm, Peg Leg PT Boat Captain.
Oh, you know, I really liked this story.
I know you did. It's beautifully drawn by Irv Novick.
Mm-hmm.
Captain Storm's going to encounter some native peoples, and it goes remarkably well.
It does. I don't think that anyone is called anything derogatory.
Except, no.
well, of course, the Japanese that they're fighting.
The Japanese,
of course.
Yes,
but it's in the context of the war. Yeah, yeah.
I would argue that probably these indigenous peoples did have, you know, modern conveniences in the 1940s and mm-hmm. didn't always wear native costume.
Lays.
But I don't know.
Oh.
I mean, I'm thinking Hawaii did, so I'm assuming other Pacific Island
they have sailboats
did.
And they have houses. They live in houses.
Surfboards.
Yeah, surfboards and...
Now,
they have leisure time.
Yes. This is Captain Storm, number 18. It is sadly the final issue of Captain Storm.
Yeah.
I know you're sad about that.
I am sad. Actually, this is one of the titles I've enjoyed reading.
So in following this issue, in GI Combat number 138, a new team was introduced consisting of remnants from defunct war character series. So Captain Storm was then teamed with Gunner and Sarge, who had lost their own series in our fighting forces, and Johnny Cloud, the Navajo Ace, who had lost his series in All-American Men of War. And since they had all lost their series, the team was called the Losers.
Oh my God.
Not very clever. The Losers got a regular series a few months later in our Fighting Forces number 123 and continued from that point, February 1970, until 1978. They were killed off in 1985 in the Crisis on Infinite Earths and then killed off again in 2003 in the New Frontier,
okay,
where they died on Dinosaur Island.
Oh,
yeah. We've read that. You don't remember, yeah. but we read it
I do.
For an episode here.
Maybe I do. I remember Dinosaur Island, of course.
Well, of course, yeah. yes.
I remember that issue. I do. It was modern.
Yes.
It was drawn. Yes, yes, yes.
Well, good for you.
Yeah.
I'm very proud.
I mean, come on. Dinosaur Island. That's awesome.
Also, somewhere along the line, Captain Storm got a eye patch to cement his pirate motif.
Okay.
I don't know if that ever happened in story or if it just appeared. Anyway, you'll never guess why the wooden-legged P.T. boat skipper becomes a battle god in the startling thriller
Save My Island!
All right. And it really hammers home, this is his final issue, so it's as good as time as any to hammer home the Moby Dick.
Yes, theme.
Inference.
Yeah.
So, Captain Storm, in case you weren't aware, he lost his original PT boat and crew when they were attacked by a submarine with a tiger shark painted on its nose.
Mm-hmm.
And in the present day, a submarine with a tiger shark painted on its nose is attacking his PT boat. Mm-hmm. So he relives the moment that his original crew was lost and vows never to forget that tiger shark insignia. And
right. He'll
hunt it down if he has to walk across the bottom of the seven seas to do it.
That was the fight that he lost his leg.
It was. And he had to prove that he could fight with a wooden leg before he was qualified for combat again, which brings us right up to the present moment where his new PT boat is being attacked not only by a sub, but by a kamikaze fighter pilot.
Mm-hmm. So, what do? They release some depth charges into the water, and they're successful.
They blow that sub into bits.
But, what happens?
Well,
another enemy sub.
Another enemy sub with a tiger shark painted on its nose.
Its bow.
It must be some kind of squadron emblem.
Yeah.
Now, I will never know which sub is the one that killed my crew. It could be this one.
So what's not written here is he's thinking, I gotta kill them all!
God damn it. They evade being rammed by the sub.
Mm-hmm.
The sub's cannon does take a bite out of the PT boat, but they launch another depth charge and blow that second sub up.
Yep.
Well,
but they have taken some damage and they need to get to some land. They're never going to be able to make it back to their port.
No. Luckily, they see some men adrift in a canoe.
Yes.
Indigenous peoples. They pick up these gentlemen, who report that the sub that they had just destroyed was hunting these canoe men down.
Mm-hmm.
And they are all that's left. But their island is nearby, and they will be welcomed there with open arms and will be able to put in for repairs. Just then,
the enemy destroyer, a destroyer appears on the horizon and starts shelling them.
Yes.
So they proceed at full speed toward the island.
Full speed for land ho.
And they make it. Yes. Luckily, the engines hold out and they go to the island. And they are greeted by the natives of the island.
Yes.
Which are all dressed in, well, they seem to be dressed in fabrics. They're not dressed in like grass skirts. Or, yeah, they are dressed in fabrics. And they just have the little flower lays and flower adornments and such.
Now, the chief's daughter, she's going to take the men for a swim to refresh themselves. Apparently, the only one who gets to swim is Captain Storm.
Yes, he's in a bikini?
Well, yes, it's a, you know, square cut suit of the times.
With his wooden
which I guess he had with him on board.
I guess.
Or maybe it's his underpants.
Could be his underpants.
And he's surfing.
Yes, and he says to the chief's daughter, why is everybody looking at me? Because it is written in the sands, so I guess they have to rewrite it every day, that one such as you, man from the sea, with a leg like a wooden carving, will save our island from utter destruction. So they must have had like a sage or a prophet or a prophetess.
A witch doctor. I've seen that Brady Bunch episode. There's witch doctors on Pacific Island.
See into the future and predict that a man with a leg that's been carved out of wood would say save
why
them.
Can't they just say a wooden leg?
Yes.
A leg like a wooden carving. Now, Captain Storm hopes that it's not him because he needs to repair that boat.
It must be somebody else with a wooden leg.
Yeah. Could be a thousand. I could think of 1,000 people it could be. Back at the boat, where they are repairing it, they spot an enemy scout plane overhead. Luckily, they're camouflaged. They don't think they were spotted, but the plane, of course, probably came off the destroyer.
Right.
And a few hours later, indeed, one of the natives reports that the enemy ship has anchored on the other end of the island.
Yes.
What shall we do, man of the sea, with a leg carved out of wood?
He's just... Nothing. I'll take a search party out to see what they're up to. So he left with some of his crew, and they did indeed hack their way across the island because it's, you know, dense vegetation.
Yes.
And they come across Japanese soldiers.
Yes.
And the enemy recon party and the crew get into a big fight. And he says, make it quick and quiet. But he describes the fight as neither quick nor quiet.
But lots of punching, as these army men like to do.
You know what I like? The top panel there where Captain Storm has one man in his right arm in an in a headlock.
Yes.
And he's punching another man. And it's really good art.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Finally, the fight is over. Captain Storm and his men are triumphant. But they have to get back to the boat because the destroyer is sure to investigate their missing men.
Indeed.
They get back to the boat. JG reports that he needs more time to make the boat seaworthy. And Captain Storm says there's no time. Got to make her combat ready now.
I think JG's going to be Lieutenant Junior Grade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, the natives report again that...
He says, I didn't need the grim faces of the islanders to remind me.
That the Japanese apparently will just bomb the island to smithereens before they leave. I guess that's standard practice.
Why would they do that?
I don't know. It doesn't seem like a great way to make friends or influence people.
No, because they could use the Japanese could use the island as a refilling station or as a place to refill their supplies.
R&R.
Yeah, but Captain Storm is reminded. You will save us. It is written in the sand. Well, it was written in the sand. Someone walked over. Who walked over the prophecy?
So yes, the destroyer is heading back out to sea, but sending shells all over the island. They're going to apparently flatten the village before they move on. And how can this PT boat stop a destroyer? Their only chance is to use the Islanders' sailboats for a screen to get the PT boat close enough.
Very clever.
To sting the destroyer. Well, yeah, unless they just start bombing the sailboats.
Why would they do that? Well, I guess, yeah, well, they would do that because they're bombing the island.
And they chased those other guys down in their canoe.
And they don't know the PT boat's actually on the island. No. The Japanese don't know.
No.
Yeah. So I guess there is a huge risk here.
All right. The sailboats cluster around the PT boat. They head out to sea toward the destroyer, moving at a snail's pace so as not to break out of the camouflage of the native boats.
Suddenly, what pops up out of the water ahead of them? But
one of those damn submarines with a tiger shark face.
Mm-hmm. And above them, a plane.
A plane.
Yeah.
Scout plane. Captain Storm understands this might be the submarine that he's looking for. But he can't take time now to figure it out because this plane is coming overhead. He doesn't want the plane to see the PT boat hidden among the sails.
Right. They've got a destroyer, a submarine, and a plane.
All three.
Yeah. Fighter pilot.
The plane turns away, so Captain Storm thinks that he didn't see them, but the destroyer is not going to wait for anything. The destroyer starts firing on the sailboat Regatta.
Right. So they shoot out from behind the screen of sailboats.
And make a beeline for the destroyer.
That's their first goal. And they are catching a lot of fire. They do fire a couple of torpedoes toward the destroyer, but the torpedoes are going through such heavy fire that they aren't effective. So they
got to get in
put
close.
The gas on and get as close as they possibly can to the destroyer. I mean, remember, this is like There's a destroyer firing at them. There is a plane overhead that is a scout plane overhead, too. And then a submarine.
And a submarine.
Yeah. But they managed to send out two more torpedoes.
They're very close.
And it made what he describes as a flaming hit and sets the destroyer afire.
Now, they turn away from the destroyer, and here's the sub, who just surfaced, and they're being fired upon by the sub, and the plane now is making a kamikaze run towards their deck.
Right, so they've had no choice. They decide to take on the plane first, so the PT boat is firing at the plane, and they're heading for the sub, and the pilot is trying to catch them, but what happens is they get so close to the sub, the PT boat, rather, that the plane crashes right into the submarine. So we've got now the Captain Storm's crew is safe. The destroyer is sunk or sinking. The submarine has blown up, and the plane is no longer an issue because it's blown up too. And he's watching the nose of the sub lifted into its death dive. He said, "That may have been the killer sub that murdered my first crew. I'll never know for sure." Now, the end.
Now, they must not have known that this was being canceled, because it says, watch for the next Captain Storm naval explosion in Captain Storm.
This makes me sad. Really, it does. I mean, I would be doing a dance if it was the last Jerry Lewis episode, Jerry Lewis issue.
Fat chance.
What's this awful?
Bob Hope.
No, what's that
Scooter.
One?
Scooter.
The Scooter. Oh, Scooter. That's awful. But no, we're going to miss. This is it for Captain Storm.
Well, no, we'll be back with the losers. Maybe we should pull out some losers adventures for you.
No, that's all right. I've got plenty to read with my,
collection
of Green Lanterns.
Thanks to Sheldon Mayer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm sorry for your loss.
Thoughts and prayers.
But we'll have other delights. In fact, we'll be reading Green Lantern next week.
Will we indeed?
Sure.
Nice.
And after that, our 300th episode, where we have a special guest star.
You're kidding.
No.
300.
I know.
We've sat down at a table together for 298 as of today, right?
Yes.
Times. When I started this with you.
Yes.
All those years ago,
yes.
I never dreamed that it would take this long.
You can be honest. You never dreamed I'd stick with anything this long.
I really didn't think you would.
Well, I surprised you, didn't I?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think, with all our doubling up and whatnot, I do believe we will end up with about 412 episodes.
Okay.
So yeah, because we have over been, halfway done.
Yeah, we have been, doing multiple. Like to this one, we did two issues.
And then who knows what?
Yeah.
I know of someone that wants to do a Super Friends podcast.
Oh, really?
Yes.
We're the Super Friends.
Well, all right, but they never said that, really. They said, "We're the Super Friends."
Okay.
You can find us on social media at GoGoCheckPod. You can rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us on our sister podcast, Nerd Orchestra, which explores orchestral scores of superhero and adventure movies. And you can find us right back here next week with Green Lantern.
Oh, I can't wait.
Right? Well, you're going to have to wait a week.
A week. Okay. All right.
Bye!
Hey, Mr. Wind, just keep us sailing.
Keep us sailing along.
High in the sky, there's no curtain.
Yes, we'll have fun. So everyone, come on.
Guide us.
When you're beside me, we can fly.